Committee on Environment and Natural Resources will come to order. First item on the agenda is Senate File 240. Senator Metzen, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Senate File 240 is the Minnesota Land Conservation Property Tax Act. It's a little twist on the Green Acres bills that have been before you and have been before the Senate since 1967. This, I believe, kind of narrows the area that we're trying to get at, and it deals with, obviously, conservation. It does provide for reduced property taxes on conservation land that would be based on the value of the land as conservation land, obviously. Section 1 allows a landowner to transfer property from the Green Acres program to this land conservation tax law. And we go on to say, we talk about the program requirements. Provides for a three-year repayment of the difference between the market value and a conservation value tax for property removed from this Conservation Act. And I think that's, they call that the, not the buyback or the
clawback
provision. So we think that's necessary to be in this bill. But this bill did get a full hearing a couple weeks ago, I believe, in Senator Bickerman's committee. And we had a great response from that committee, thinking that this might be another way to look at this kind of property on kind of a more smaller way of doing it and than the Green Acres. And I'm not here today to talk about Green Acres, but this will be more narrowly focused. And with me today for a few brief comments is Vance Granis. Besides being a farmer, he's a local attorney down in the South St. Paul, Invergrove Heights, Egan area. Our families go back, we don't want to admit, tell them how many years do we, Vance? We go back a long ways.
When were you born?
Yeah, a long time ago. But he's got some very, very pristine, beautiful property out there at Invergrove, and he and his family desire to keep it that way forever and ever. And so it's a matter of fact, Vance, before you start, maybe you could pass out or have somebody, the staff or somebody, give you a little picture of the property, that an example of what would be covered under that. So with that, Mr. Chairman and members, with your permission, Mr. Granis will give you a few remarks. He started working in 1967 with then-Senator Paul Toohey from the South St. Paul area. So this goes back a long way with the Green Acres stuff, and very knowledgeable in this area. So, Mr. Granis.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen. My name is Vance Granis, Jr. I'm a resident of Invergrove Heights, Minnesota. As you know, Minnesota has a long history of promoting conservation of our natural resources with plans such as the Minnesota Conservation and Preservation Plan, the Conservation Legacy Plan, the 50-year vision conservation for Minnesota's future, and most recently, the Minnesota voters approved the Outdoor Heritage Fund. Senate File 240, the Minnesota Land Conservation Property Tax Law, is yet another piece in the state's efforts to encourage conservation of our natural resources. The need for this law was developed after the legislature last year removed so-called unproductive land from the Green Acres Law. Although the so-called unproductive land, consisting of wetlands, sloughs, forests, and other wildlife habitat, may not produce a monetary return for the landowner, these lands produce a very valuable benefit to the public as surface water treatment and groundwater recharge facilities and carbon sequestering and retention facilities, as well as wildlife habitat. As those of you that are also serve on the Agriculture Committee heard from the many witnesses in connection with the Green Acres amendments, landowners throughout the state have been preserving and protecting these unproductive lands for four or more generations, and they want to be able to pass these lands to their children and grandchildren to continue protecting and preserving the lands in the future. The Green Acres Law permitted these owners to resist development pressures with the benefit of lower taxes provided by the Green Acres Law. Many landowners testified that if the Green Acres taxes were lost on their unproductive land, they would be forced to sell the land for development and the conservation benefits to the community would be lost. I live on 140 acres of what was farmland in Invergrove Heights that was first purchased by my great-grandfather in 1928. It then became my grandparents' property, then my father's, and now mine. I have lived there since 1962. Although much of the land was formerly cultivated and pastured, approximately 30 acres are still tilled, with 20 tillable acres now used for pasture. The remaining 90 acres consist of mostly undeveloped wooded shoreline along a chain of scenic and incredibly pristine lakes with water clarity reaching 20 feet. My property has been enrolled in the Green Acres since it was started in 1967. And I've passed out pictures so you can see what I'm talking about that we're trying to protect. However, unlike the other owners that I've mentioned, I do not intend to pass this land to my children or my grandchildren, nor do I plan that the land be developed. Rather, my goal is to work with the Dakota County Farmland and Natural Areas Program, Dodge Nature Center, the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center, and other partners to protect this land and waters and the lands of my neighbors for the enjoyment and use of future generations. However, that's a story for another day. But today, if the Green Acres protection for our land and our neighbors' land is lost, before our goal is accomplished, we may be forced to sell for development, even though we would prefer not to. As Senator Metzen has said before, God isn't making any more of this land, and once it's gone forever. That is why we have to do what we can to see that it is preserved, and that's what Senate File 240 is intended to do. Even with all of the prospective funding that's going to be generated over the next 25 years in the Outdoor Heritage Fund, we simply cannot acquire enough sloughs and woodlands to provide the same benefit that the private property owners of unproductive land are providing free to the public. There is a need to encourage rather than discourage private owners to continue providing public conservation benefits. Senate File 240 is an attempt to provide that encouragement. Some might assert that SF 240 is a subsidy to the landowners. Okay. To the contrary, it could be argued that private landowners are not only partially subsidizing environmental benefits to the public, but they are paying taxes for the privilege of providing that benefit. Senate File 240 tries to keep that cost to these landowners at a reasonable level. The language in Senate File 240 is patterned after the Green Acres Law, except that it specifically applies to conservation land rather than the terms adjacent slough, wasteland, and woodlands. The other argument that you may hear is that the tax deferment for this unproductive land unfairly shifts taxes to other landowners. I strongly disagree with that position because it doesn't fairly look at the entire picture. The reason for that is this unproductive land or conservation land does not generate a growing need for government services such as schools, police, fire, sewer, water, roads, etc. Therefore, the taxes that are paid by this unproductive land help to offset the cost for providing such services to other parts of the community. In the suburban and rural areas, sloughs, wetlands, and woodlands have become the most desirable locations for residential development. The lack of deferment on these unproductive lands will likely force its eventual sale for residential development and a corresponding higher demand for governmental services. From my experience as a former mayor, and as repeated studies have shown and documented, single-family residences do not generate sufficient taxes for all the services that they require. As a result, over the long term, there will be a net loss of revenue, causing higher taxes for other property owners in the community if you, not you, but if the state, through its policies, forces development of this land. Thus, instead of reducing the tax burden on the other property owners, Senate File 240 will, it can be argued, that it will increase the property taxes on other community residents if we don't get it adopted and continue to protect this. In many ways, public policy has been created that conserves the natural, scenic, and open space benefits our land. The recent passage of the Heritage Amendment is a testament to that strong policy. But the tax policy should also work hand in hand with these other policies to achieve this goal. I want to thank you for allowing me to give you my comment, and hope you will receive this bill favorably.
Questions for the witness? Senator Metzen, do you have any additional witnesses?
No.
I know there is one person who wanted to testify on this particular Senate file, and if there are people who want to testify, they need to get on the witness list and hand that to our staff here, if that's something you want. Who's the person?
This is Bill
Efforts. Mr. Efforts, I believe we had that request. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bill Efforts. I'm the Assistant County Assessor at Hennepin County. I'm here today for the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers in the Legislative Committee. And I just wanted to express some of our concerns we have over this legislation. We talked to Mr. Grannis about his concerns, and we certainly appreciate where he's coming from. But we wanted to express some of our concerns to Mr. Grannis and certainly to this committee as well. MAAO encourages the use of, state-administered programs such as the property tax refund program and special targeting refunds and the income tax system if policymakers wish to grant special tax relief to these to taxpayers. We feel that some of the language in this bill may be open-ended and broad, and there might be some unintended benefactors from this we talked to Mr. Grannis about. And the administration, the statewide, certainly would be difficult depending on what region you're located in the state of Minnesota. specifically, what we're concerned with in this bill is that who would be responsible for determining what is the natural lands areas that are talked about in the bill. Cultivated agricultural land includes land that was formerly used or is capable and former pasture land. That we think that's kind of open-ended and far as those descriptions of how we would interpret that or who would qualify. And I think Mr. Grannis did a good job of, he's well aware of what our situation is on these. There's also a conflict in referencing the unimproved real estate versus real estate improved with houses and garages. I think we know where he's coming from on that, but there still seems to be some interpretation involved there. I thank you for this opportunity to express our concerns to you. appreciate. Thank you very much.
Mr. Efforts, how were assessors interpreting the Green Acres Law before 2008? How were they interpreting unproductive land? What was the process there? Was that any clearer?
Well, you make a good point there. I guess prior to 2008, we were making that primary determination whether that was an agricultural property, and then if that was, then all this non-productive land was included in the Green Acres property classification.
We're hearing from Mr. Granis that he's got pristine acreage and it was under Green Acres. That was not, doesn't sound like that was producing a commodity, actual commodity, but it was still interpreted as Green Acres.
I'm not specific with Mr. Granis' specific property, but there must have been some kind of agricultural activity going on for him to receive that class.
Mr. Granis?
Chairman, part of our property, as I indicated, about 90 acres is in what's called the unproductive today. Some of it used to be until my grandfather took it out of production to try and protect the lake that you saw and stuff. But the other portion is tilled and does have production in order to qualify as the Green Acres Law requires. As was indicated, we did meet, I think, some of their concerns over parts of the language could be easily taken care of with some clarifying language. We met a half an hour ago, didn't have time to start rewriting the language in that sort of time. I can't rewrite the whole philosophical part that applies equally to Green Acres as it does to this law, that you just shouldn't have people treated differently based on their different lands. But I think that it would be reasonable to make minor changes that will eliminate some of their concerns about how they would apply it.
I guess the question I wondered out loud was, I don't recall, I mean, we had an auditor's report in 2008 regarding interpretations of Green Acres, but it didn't seem to be a problem. Interpretation of Green Acres didn't seem to be a problem that we were hearing of until then.
Well,
maybe on individual cases, yeah, there was, but I mean, this is,
Mr.
I mean, if there's a problem with interpreting what natural lands means in this bill, I know.
Mr. Chairman, if I...
Why aren't we making that same... having that same discussion as it applies to Green Acres? Of course, I guess I just answered my question. We are having that discussion. Senator Metzen? Senator Egbertson, I know you had your hand up.
If he's with me, he could make a few remarks. If he's not, he could go back to his seat over there. But Senator Skoy, I think, wanted to weigh in on that for a minute.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Metzen,
you're a little bigger than I am.
With regard to the egg issue, one of the things that the legislative auditor brought up is we had the terminology primarily devoted to agriculture, which is extremely hard to understand and I think wasn't being well interpreted across the state by the assessors. How do you decide if a parcel that is 120 acres in total size, 25 of which is hay land, is primarily devoted to agriculture? So that was how we ended up going down kind of the road we went, as we were trying to figure out some way to deal with the primarily devoted to agriculture phrasing.
And Senator Egbertson,
thank you for your patience. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we have the two authors available here for questions. So I just have a question on the Senator Metzen's report here, the backside. Basically, it's subdivision 9 of Senator Metzen's bill. I'm not sure who would answer this, but is that Is that part of the existing, with regards to the lien, is that part of the existing Green Acres bill now, the way it sits, or the new one coming up?
Can you comment on that?
I think Mr. Grannis does.
Go ahead.
Yes. Most of the law is patterned almost identical from the existing Green Acres, and that part about putting a lien on the property for picking up those back taxes is, if not identical, the same as in the Green Acres law.
Follow up?
Just a follow up. I was just reviewing Senator Scoy's bill. I didn't see that in there, so thank you.
Senator Dill and then Sieben.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I'm interested in preserving ag land, open space land, forest land, and I really have a view that we should be expanding the Green Acres program to include more land, even if it's not agricultural, because if you have landowners out there willing to preserve open space and they're going to do it without any development for the time being, I'd like to see them get some economic incentive to do that. And Senator Metzen's bill is moving in the direction that I like. If we can't expand the Green Acres program to include all open space land, this is an option to do it in a different, slightly different way, but really the same way, but with a different name.
Exactly.
Senator Sieben.
So I think this is a good idea.
Thank you.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll just piggyback on what Senator Dill said. I know that in my area of the state where there's a lot of pressure for development, the changes that were passed in last year's tax bill really severely impacted people and had a negative effect where they feel like now they're going to turn unproductive land or land that they were using or enjoying for conservation purposes. They're now tilling that land in areas of Afton and rural Cottage Grove. So I know there are other proposals out there, but I'd just like to thank Senator Metzen for bringing this bill forward, and hopefully we'll be able to come to some resolution yet this session so that we don't lose more acres of land to development where landowners want to preserve it.
Senator Dibble, and then we have someone, an additional person who's requested to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have much to add. I like this bill, too. And I think it kind of gets us out of a little bit out of the box that we found ourselves in with the Green Acres program, you know, and that, you know, and I think Senator Scoy spoke to it, you know, that was designed to deal with ag land, and but we had this, you know, forested areas and, you know, other kinds of areas that then started being taxed at potential value, which then, of course, people started cutting down their trees or you know, building up to the edge of the water, and they're preserving buffer strips for conservation purposes. So this seems to get to that. One thing I do recall, though, as we were having some of those interim hearings, those pre-hearings, was that some of this conservation land present use valuation versus potential future development use actually is kind of getting up there a little bit, because there's some growing perception that as there's less and less land available to be used for hunting or other purposes, that's actually valuable in and of itself today for its present use. And so I would just say to Senator Metzen, we need to be aware of that, because you know, if the assessors are valuing the present use as something more than we intend, people will be paying higher property taxes, taking away the goal of this bill. But we can have that conversation another day. I know we're probably going to taxes, and I think this does a nice job of maybe putting a finer point on a policy and a public good that we're trying to imply in Green Acres, which wasn't
right.
Necessarily the place to do that.
Right. And there's an additional layer that assessors will probably, and the law will probably have to be considering, and that is when conservation land becomes more and more harvestable as a commodity for our biofuels, and we've already begun a little bit of that, authorized some of that to be done, and so that's going to add an additional layer, and so that's going to, I don't think it's going to blur the line. I think it's going to converge the issues, and it'll be a great conversion. You know, we've got agriculture and conservation converging, and I think that's a wonderful move forward. Mr. Hagan. Hagan, I apologize.
Close enough. Mr. Chairman, my name is John Hagan. I'm Assistant Director of the Property Tax Division with the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and I'd like to alert you to an administrative concern we have with Senator Metz's bill, one of the numerous problems we had, quite honestly, with the existing Green Acres legislation that was amended in 2008 was the difficulty for assessors to come up with a value for the non-productive lands or the unimproved lands to try to determine how much value that land would have to a farmer, to try to not consider any outside economic characteristics that would add value to that land. And we quite honestly found it quite impossible. We did come up with a method of valuing farmland, although that was getting increasingly difficult, too, because of the economic various economic influences on agricultural lands that were causing it to be affected for purposes other than agricultural. This particular bill calls for the Commissioner of Revenue to develop a fair and equitable means of valuing these non-productive lands or the unimproved lands, and without irrespective of any other market conditions, the seasonal influences or residential influences or commercial industrial influences. And although we certainly could come up with a value with legislative direction, we concluded, and the legislative auditor pretty much concurred with that it's quite impossible to come up with a fair and equitable value for those lands, how much they contribute, to try to subtract outside economic influences from that valuation. So,
what do other states do?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not certain what other states do. We could certainly do some research. The method of, and this is sort of a Green Acres factor, is sort of unique to Minnesota. An awful lot of states don't do a separate value. Some states have a reduced class rate. Some states have covenants, 10-year rolling covenants, things like that reduce the value without carrying a separate value for it.
A lot of other states already have laws similar or exactly like Senator Metzen's current proposal, and it doesn't seem to me to be a leap to check on what other states have been doing for many years in terms of this proposal. It shouldn't be that hard.
Mr. Chairman, I'd certainly be happy to look into it if I could find which states have plans like that. Our resources, working with the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers and with the knowledge in the department, we were unable to come up with a meaningful valuation estimate.
And I understand that because it's somewhat new, but fortunately there are a lot of other states that have had practice at this. We can look to their guidance. Maybe not exactly the same way, but they can certainly provide a direction. Senator Metzen?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Grannis and I have pledged to continue to work with the assessors, but I quite frankly, I'm not so as concerned about the administration from their departments than I am about conserving our land out there. So I know these folks will tell you they're overworked and overtaxed, but my goal here is to protect the land, not to reduce administration work at their level. And I think with the other states, we can get a pattern of what the other ones are doing and try to make their life a little easier. But that's not the goal of this bill, to make department heads.
The landowners seem to be generally okay with Green Acres up until 2008.
The way it's administered. And
Mr. Chairman, if I might, we had
Hagan?
Numerous complaints about instances of applications of Green Acres. We had legislative complaints and legislative hearings from assessors who didn't allow Green Acres. There was at least one county board I was aware of that passed a resolution that said they would not have Green Acres. We wrote a report to the legislature in 2005 or 2006 at the legislature's request in answer to a lot of problems we were having with uniformity in Green Acres throughout the state. And then following that, the legislative auditor got involved and took a look at it. So we maybe didn't do a particularly good job of alerting legislators to the concerns, but there were certainly problems with Green Acres.
Chairman?
Well, the people have alerted us since 2008 very well. Senator Vickerman, did you have your hand up?
Mr. Chair,
yes, sir.
I'd like to say something about the bill and move the bill, but after the testimony.
Okay. Is there any additional testimony? Senator Vickerman, go ahead, and then I'll get to Senator Dibble for discussion.
Mr. Chair, this bill passed Ag Department Committee by 100%. And I think what we're trying to do is kind of get a mix between the Green Acres and the conversation. I put land away, and you know that, the 80-acre perpetual, greatest thing I've ever done. And so I think we need to do more of this. So I want to move this bill whenever, and I think it'll go to the taxes, I believe. Yeah. It'll go to the tax committee, and, you know, sometimes you have a toolbox, you have to have more than one tool in the box. And that's what I'm looking at here, just another tool in the box to help. When that time, I will move the bill.
Go ahead and make your motion.
Yeah. Mr. Chair,
then we'll make sure someone.
And then Senator Scoy brings up a good point that he wants to get on the record.
Okay, go ahead, Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think with regard to the valuation, perhaps the tax committee can find something where we would use a highest and best use and a percentage of it or something like that. But that's clearly a tax committee jurisdictional issue which we'll deal with, but there is an issue that this committee should deal with, and that is that in order to have these conservation lands, there should be some conservation plan or some mechanism in place for a soil water conservation district or somebody to make sure that these lands are being conserved as you intend them to be. And there has to be a criteria established, something. And I would certainly think that the Environment Committee should be involved in the discussion of what that criteria is and what would be the appropriate agency to develop those plans.
I thought there was reference to the statewide conservation plan.
2.14.
2.14. Minnesota Statewide Conservation and Preservation Plan. That's the most comprehensive conservation plan Minnesota has had to date, and it's fresh. It's just 2008, and we could certainly review it closer to see if that's the most appropriate. But I'm certainly familiar. I noticed that, and I think that's a trustworthy guidepost.
Chairman, one more remark. You know, this is good for the entire state of Minnesota. And I just want to note that this property is about 7.5 to 8 minutes from the St. Paul Capitol. And you don't find this kind of stuff, like Senator Sieben and Senator Dibble and some others said, too much of this anymore. And we don't have any shots at this. And again, you could go out this over the Lafayette Bridge and be at Mr. Grandis's land in about 8 to 9 minutes. And it's hard to say how many of these sites you could find statewide, but particularly in the metropolitan area. And once this stuff is gone, it is gone forever.
Senator Dibble?
Thanks for sharing. Actually, Senator Scoy probably made my point, which was this issue about how we value the property. Pair the State Department of Revenue's comment. Sounds like they're looking for something that's a little more prescriptive and specific rather than just kind of leaving it up to them. And, we can do that. I don't know if we want to do that, but we can do that. So, we'll take that under advisement as we make our way to taxes.
Yeah.
But the larger point is, and it's to your earlier point, and that is, you know, where did this whole Green Acres problem come from? And we need to make super sure that we're dealing with that in this bill. And that is, and I think it was articulated earlier at the table as well, is that inconsistent application of Green Acres across the state by the county assessors. You know, it's just a lack of understanding or a philosophical predisposition or something like that. And it really wasn't up to county assessors. It was a state policy in place, and what might have fallen down was our ability to enforce it or communicate it or promulgate it or whatever. And we need to make sure that you know, this is the policy of the state. This is a public good that we all agree to, and it needs to be applied consistently across the board in the entire state.
Senator Metzen, what's your kind of intent for the bill this session?
Well, we are very serious about this modification of the, and I want it, the intent is to pass this legislation, and I think we have the next stop to probably be in a tax committee or Senator Scoy's division, and then to the full tax committee. And I'm not carrying the so-called large Green Acres bill. This is a zeroing in on something that's very important to me, and I believe the members of this committee, and hopefully the Minnesota Senate and the House. So my intent is obviously to protect this property.
Senator Vickerman, I think we're ready.
Renew my motion, Mr. Chair, that Senate File 240 be recommended to pass and be referred to taxes, if that's where it goes.
Okay. Further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Thank you Senator Chairman Metzen. And committee members, for your help in passing this legislation.
We're ready. Senator Scoy, Senate File 386. And thank you for your contribution to the previous discussion as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And happy to be here with Senate File 386. Maybe bear with me, if I could just make a couple of comments before we start.
Would you mind, Senator Scoy, bringing the microphone a little closer? Appreciate that.
Yeah, I move my hands around so much, I'm always knocking it out of the way. But, you know, we had a number of questions here and comments when we were talking about Senator Metzen's bill about this land that is going to be plowed under or turned under or something because of the taxes that are going to have to be paid on it if they're no longer enrolled in Green Acres. The Green Acres fix or repeal or whatever we do is not going to solve a lot of those issues, because those parcels of land were inappropriately classified agriculture land, and so their classification rate was 0.5. When they get classified something else, the classification rate is going to go up to probably 1.0. So there will be an increase in taxes on those parcels just because they technically weren't ag land and were misclassified. Compounding that, a number of those parcels were also qualifying for Green Acres, and they no longer will qualify for Green Acres because they were inappropriately qualified to begin with. So even if you repeal all the changes in 08, you're not going to address a lot of those issues. In the Star Tribune of last weekend, Washington County, I think it has 980 parcels that they have reclassified out of the ag land. It's not going to help there. Stearns County, I don't remember the number, but it was 700-800, something like that. Same situation. When I was in ag committee, we had a farmer, a horse farmer, sat next to me and testified to repeal the Green Acres. He technically doesn't qualify for the ag classification, and he doesn't have enough acres to qualify for Green Acres. He was in both. He was getting both. No matter what we do with the Green Acres bill, Senate File 386, and how that moves forward, that gentleman's taxes are going to go up. And very likely, Senator Sieben, in your area, those 980 parcels that are being reclassified, their taxes are going to change. And it's because this primarily devoted to agriculture definition was so vague that a lot of assessors, in my opinion, we're just giving all relatively larger parcels the ag classification and automatically granting them green acres. When we made the green acres changes, it drove assessors to reevaluate that. And they have since done that. And I don't believe that's going to get undone. But, you know, we'll see how that works. And I've got this group behind me that can come up and validate or, you know, what I'm saying or not. But, you know, as we move forward, I'd like everybody to kind of keep that in the back of their mind, that without something along Senator Metzen's order, and I don't know if that's the answer or not, but at least that's an effort to fix the problem for what people want to do, which is to conserve this land. And the Green Acres Program, while it was kind of doing that in a few jurisdictions, it wasn't doing it uniformly across the state. And as you've heard, there was a number of issues with regard to the way things are valued. So thank you for me allowing me to make those kind of starting comments. I am here with the bill that currently repeals the changes that were made to the Green Acres Law in 2008. And let me say that this bill was amended in Ag Committee to significantly change it from what I had introduced in Senate File 386. But let me just start by walking down some of what the changes were that we made with regard to the Green Acres Bill. The main change was that we tried to focus this Green Acres Bill, whose purpose is to equalize taxes on agriculture land. And what I mean by equalize taxes on agriculture land is if there's land value pressures outside of agriculture driving up the land value, such as housing development, recreational land pressures, hunting, etc., that those values are, you know, higher than the ag value, they're going to drive up the land values and make the property taxes higher than the ag land that is sustainable by agriculture, that we want to reduce those property taxes so that those people can stay on the land and farm. That's what equalize taxes for ag land means to me. And as you heard today, when we started this redo, we had a terrible time coming up with a statewide mechanism of valuing the agriculture land. And we had an impossible job in coming up with a statewide value on this non-productive ag land, which has started to be called, I prefer the word non-conforming, but on land that isn't, you know, producing hay or grazing animals or something that could be called devoted primarily to agriculture. So in the end, we were going to disallow those practices from the Green Acres program, unless in situations where they were so intermixed that they weren't practicable to be separated, which would be windbreaks and sloughs, and, you know, you can kind of go down the list of things that you can envision in your mind that wouldn't be practicable to be separated. And in 386, as originally introduced, we did have some effort to try to clarify that part. But so in the Green Acres change, we removed these non-conforming parcels from the Green Acres program and limited it to land that was actually having some production for agriculture on it. And it was quite broad, what we were thinking, you know, pastures certainly would qualify. But that was the major change. Then in the conference committee, there were a number of changes that brought in, one of which was the 7-year clawback. That has gotten to be extremely controversial. It wasn't in the Senate bill that you members voted on originally up the Senate floor. It was in the conference committee report. And this is an effort to encourage people to get their non-conforming parcels in conformity, or the penalty would be higher when they take them out of Green Acres. That also was addressed in the original 386 bill. Another place where there was change In the original Green Acres law, there were four criteria, I think it was, which wouldn't bring about a reevaluation of whether it was a Green Acres parcel or not: the death, divorce, marriage, and transfer to a child or children. And we removed the transfer to a child or children part in 2008 change, and that probably very likely was a mistake. So we were fixing that in the original Senate file 386. And I just lost my train of thought. The other change we had was RIM and CRP. We removed RIM, CRP, and conservation programs from eligibility in the Green Acres program. That very likely was a mistake. I'll take the blame for this on my part. In the original drafting of the bill, I understand that everybody was real busy last year on other conservation issues, and it really wasn't brought to my attention the negative consequences of that. And CRP and RIM under current statutes are defined as agriculture land because they have to have been producing an agriculture crop in order to qualify for those programs. So in an amendment that we offered to the original Senate file 386, we put those programs back into Green Acres eligibility, but they were removed in the 2008 changes. So that's kind of a rundown of the changes that occurred in 2008. I think I hit most of them. Let me just before I close up here, I want to say that the amendment that was offered to my bill in the Ag Committee is a repeal of the Green Acres, but it also was quite broadly drafted to include all of the classification changes that occurred in the 2008 tax bill. It includes some rate changes for forest land. It includes a number of other provisions dealing with the way ag buildings and grain bins, et cetera, are to be dealt with. And so, I think those are primarily tax committee issues, and I'm not sure that the author of the amendment intended for that to be included in the repeal or not, but I'm pretty sure that as this moves to tax committee, there will be some tightening up some changes to the Senate file 386 in the tax committee in those areas. But with that, I'll stand for questions.
I think the sense, not everybody, but a growing sense is that there were enough problems created with the changes in 2008. This isn't to assign blame to anyone, but the fact of the matter is that there appeared to be enough problems with the changes that folks see fit that, no, we will not ignore concerns about pre-2008 Green Acres, but we would prefer to reset and make any changes from here on in with a closer eye. That it appeared to be the sense of the Agriculture Committee as well.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that people, you know, think that this should have had more discussion. From my perspective, we have been working at this for a number of years. The department brought a report, and I think Mr. Hagen said in 05 or 06. We did pass a Green Acres bill in 07 off the Senate floor, a conference committee report in 07 that was vetoed by the governor, and we again did it in 08. So we have been looking at this for quite a while. Now, do we need to revisit some of it? I acknowledge that by the bringing forth of Senate File 386 that does some corrections. I do want to remind the committee that, as I stated earlier, that a lot of these issues aren't going to go away because they were just plain misclassification issues to begin with. But the other thing that, you know, that I'd like to, the other part that I'd like to make known, and I've heard it said that people didn't complain about this. Well, maybe they did and maybe they didn't. I've heard a lot of complaints about homeowners' property tax increase, property taxes. Some of these jurisdictions, every homeowner in that county, every one of them, and Wright County is one of the counties, I can't remember all of them, pays between a 15 and 20% property tax increase to pay for the shift that's occurring in Green Acres, just to cover the shift in Green Acres. Every homeowner in some of these counties are paying almost a 20% increase. Now, I think if they knew that, they would like to have answers and make sure that where that shift is coming from is fulfilling the purpose that it's intended to fulfill. And, you know, I hope Senator Metzen gets a full day in committee or a good day in committee to explain, and we can come up with some reasoned approach to preserve these conservation lands. But, you know, you have to remember that somebody else pays those property taxes, and we have to make sure that we're doing that in a well-thought-out and reasonable manner so that, you know, the public will accept that, too.
Well, we have Green Acres was instituted in the 60s.
I think it's, 40-some years old, years ago.
Yeah. And it was written for agricultural preserve ag land. Over the course of 40 years, the provision has been used for, let's just assume it's been used for other purposes. I think it's debatable, and it depends on the situation, whether that conservation land remains productive or not. Because we hear a lot from hunting communities about how they are concerned about CRP going back into tillage, and that tells me that that land has always been productive. So, regardless, we have a provision that was, let's just assume, was misclassified or not used for the original purpose established in the 60s, but it's being used for a good thing. And I understand it is the auditor's role to point out the fact that it may or may not be, this provision may or may not be used currently for the exact technical reasons listed and intended in the 60s. But that doesn't take away the fact that it is being used for a positive purpose. Just to say, I don't recall from the auditor's report that the particular changes that were instituted in 2008 were the ones that they recommended. Maybe some, maybe not. But I think what I gleaned from the auditor's report was that the legislature needs to review its policy towards Green Acres and whether it wants to include conservation activities in Green Acres. And that was a discussion that the auditor asked us to have. And I think it's a very good thing that we're having that discussion now. I think what we're hearing primarily from farmers is that they want this to be the policy of the state, that conservation activities, whether that be on productive land and debated whether it's productive or not, occurs, they want conservation activities to be the policy of the state, that there should be, that they should be under Green Acres. And if, as part of our policy discussion, we choose to break out the conservation activities as part of a separate provision, such as what Senator Metzen is
proposing, then so be it. But I don't think there was an intent for government to say, well, it's technically not what it intended, even though what is happening is a very good thing, and let's not do it anymore without a more comprehensive review. Not that it wasn't talked about before, but a more comprehensive review and a more comprehensive discussion of the state's policy on these activities. Because what we have to admit is that there have been huge benefits. It's not just for hunters. This isn't recreational property alone. I mean, this has huge impacts on water quality, on jobs, and on the ability of farmers who want to do the right thing to be able to afford to do the right thing with their own land. And there's just been so many rippling benefits that I think it's important to take all those considerations into account. And I hope if the tax committee is considering adjustments to the bill, I hope it will review those issues very, very carefully and make sure that we don't make some of the same mistakes that we did in 2008. And I say we, because I voted for this bill 2008 too. I share the responsibility, and we have to take into account all of the tax impacts. If there is a hunting or outdoor recreation benefit, then I think you have to also take into account the fact, the impact of that increased activity on the local economy and the benefits to the property tax and other tax revenues that result from that. There's University of Minnesota studies that show that every acre that you preserve, you put $150 back into the local economy. So there's those tax impacts have also need to be taken into account if we're going to make the argument that there is a shift onto homeowners. Those are just my feelings, and I appreciate the hard work you've done on this, Senator Skoy. You're clearly the point person on this and have delved into these issues in detail, and we appreciate your continuing attention to this, because I mean, if it wasn't for you, we may not be considering this repeal in the first place or any changes from 2008. So we thank you for that. Senator Dibble, did you have your hand up?
Yeah. Go ahead. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you made many of my points, so I don't have to repeat them on, you know, the conservation benefits and our need to be more intentional around that, more explicit. Though I did actually, after one of the last informational meetings, some guy ran up to me in the hallway and said, well, conservation was intended when he apparently was around in those days when Green Acres was first established, but is not obvious from a plain reading of the law. So we do need to be more intentional about that. And Senator Skoy made my point, the point that I was going to make also about, if you know, the dynamic of property taxes, and when we tamp down property taxes for good reasons in one area in a particular jurisdiction, we're just squeezing balloons. We're moving it around within that jurisdiction. Benefits notwithstanding, that's a simple fact of local property tax dynamic. The other point I was going to make, though, was this old 7-year clawback, and you know the other thing that we need to pay attention to, of course, are folks. It's maybe more of a metropolitan area issue. Who use Green Acres, you know, as a way to shield themselves from taxes, but do have the intent of ultimately developing that property, and that was an issue that we tried to address, and we need to continue to be mindful of that. That we're not just simply giving land speculators and folks who really want to see a payday from their land some ability to shield themselves, because the purpose of this, whether it's ag land protection or conservation land protection, is protecting those lands for that purpose for the long haul. So the bill that was passed last year, you know, maybe stuff happened that was unanticipated, but It was a good faith and a good attempt to deal with those issues that had all cropped up, inconsistency of application across the state and, you know, intentionality and protecting land in perpetuity and that sort of thing, responding to the legislative auditor. So it was a good bill, and, you know, and it's all of our fault for not looking at maybe some of those conservation issues. I wasn't dialed in that much, and I'm on the property tax committee, or on the tax committee. I bear some of that responsibility.
You know, Senator Dibble, even on that point, let me pose this question. Someone takes advantage of Green Acres benefit, and their land is reforested for a period of time. And let's just say they're doing that for saving it for future development. They're speculating it. What's the likelihood that that developer is going to cut down every single tree, remove every single buffer, and pave over the entire property?
Well, I think high. I mean, if you look at how a lot of the suburban development has occurred, in the second, third tier of the metro area, it's just way easier for a developer to come in and clear cut and scrape
Isn't it way easier to pave over a property if there's nothing there in the first place? So now let's just assume you have some buffering or some wetlands or some trees. Yeah, maybe some of them get cut down, but a lot of them will stay too, because that increases property values. So before we just condemn someone for holding over a piece of property, even for a period of time that has that benefit, maybe we can consider the fact that at least for that period of time it did have a benefit, number one. And number two, if it is eventually developed, it won't likely, I don't think it'll be likely, because I think there's enormous value to keeping trees in it as much as possible in a development. I think it will be better than it would have if it had just been developed previous to that those conservation efforts. Certainly the likelihood is higher. Can I predict? No, but the likelihood would be higher. That's my feeling.
Well, I have a different view, and I certainly don't think this is then the tool. You know, I mean, if that's what we desire, we can develop a different policy tool if we want to encourage. You know, if folks indeed are speculating, holding on to property, and then they're going to develop in a way that we find desirable, but I don't think they should be able to use this, because they are, you know, I mean, the purpose, you know, I think the public good we're trying to arrive at here is preserving ag land, and you know, with the Metzen bill and some of the Sequoia changes to Green Acres, other sorts of conservation preservation over the very long haul. Now, stuff is going to be developed. I think we're having a completely different sort of fiscal and public policy conversation, and we're trying to incent them towards that kind of development. That's a whole different kettle of fish. My experience is very different, though. I think they come in with their bulldozers, they flatten it all out. It's very easy to come in, knock down a bunch of trees, scrape the land, haul it out, got a blank slate, throw down your roads, throw down, you know, plat your lots, throw up your houses, and then you plant little 2-inch trees. That's where I grew up, Apple Valley. That's what they did.
I think that's how it was in a lot of places in previous years too. But that practice has also changed. I think developers have seen the value of keeping the conservation. We had people who wanted to testify. If Senator Scogin, why don't you go ahead and make your comments, and then we'll go to the witnesses.
Thank you, Mr.
Joyce
Chairman.
Osborne, you could come on up to the table.
I just want to thank also Senator Scoia for this. Coming from a district that had thousands of acres in Green Acres, we caused a lot of anxiety last spring. And he helped me through that process with some good information, and has promised to bring this back. But Senator Scoia, just help me understand the tax committee's role at the next stop. Are you going to carve a pretty narrow alley for the assessors to look down? When we get those fixed, are you allowed to do that from the tax committee, or does that occur somewhere else so that that this doesn't happen again, that we are clearly putting people in Green Acres that should be there?
Mr. Chair and
Senator
Skogan, the Tax Committee is actually meeting next week, I think it is, and going to have a full committee on assessors and assessing practices. And when we get to whatever happens with regard to Green Acres, we will make sure that it's implemented uniformly across the state, because that really was one of the primary criticisms of the current Green Acres program. Is, I mean, we had 35 counties in the program that didn't offer, in the state that didn't offer. And so, you know, you have just this problem of uniformity with regard to taxes, and, you know, that's, from my perspective, not a good thing. So we're going to do the best we can with regard to that, Senator Skogan.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Joyce Osborne, and I happen to disagree with you. And no, I don't appreciate you bringing up this bill at all. My husband and I purchased a farm in Scott County, Newmarket Township, in the early 60s. In the early 70s, we signed the farm into the Green Acres program because it was available. 20 years ago, my husband retired, we quit farming, and enrolled the farm in the Conservation Reserve program, and because we had owned it more than 7 years, we were allowed to do that. When he quit farming, before we quit farming, we also planted 7,500 trees on that property. We have wetland, we have extremely hilly land. Not really good for farming, not like northern Minnesota or southern Minnesota, where I came from the north and he came from the south. I told him that he was crazy to buy that farm because a jackrabbit would have to carry their lunch. It's turned out that it has been a very, very nice area to live until development came to Newmarket and Elko. And that was about 10, 12 years ago. I have been in the Green Acres program and the Conservation Reserve program for a very long time. In the 20 years that I've been in the CRP program, the difference, and I've sold some 10-acre pieces off, and there was a very small amount of difference in the tax savings. But apparently, that is just about to change unless this Green Acres bill is repealed. In November of 8, I attended a meeting about the Green Acres in Shakopee and was appalled to learn that all the rules of the program had been changed in May of 08. So why did it take so long for landowners in Scott County to be made, that it was made knowledge to us? We were told that some of the changes were, one being if ownership changed, we would now have to pay back 7 years instead of the normal three on the difference in the taxation. In addition to that, we had only until January 2nd of 09 to make a decision if we wanted to remove all or some of the property from that Green Acres program. Shortly thereafter, I met with the county tax department and learned that the CRP program I had just re-enrolled in no longer qualified for the Green Acres program. These things just don't make sense to me. Now, if I remove any of the land from the program, even wetland, I'm obligated to pay the tax difference back 7 years, even though I was still in a legal program of Green Acres. So I've got to pay back 7 years on wetland or any land that I now take out when I was in a legal program? It doesn't make sense. And nobody had any knowledge or input into any of these changes. My farm is in a township, not inside the city limits of a town. But I'm right adjacent to two towns that are exploding, or have been within the last 5 years, until this economic downturn. I was approached many, many times by developers who wanted to buy all or part of my land. And I didn't want to sell. I still don't. Of course, now it's a moot point. The developers have gone into the woodwork. Being in a township, this farm is my retirement, my 401k, if you will, that I manage myself. How would any of you here today, including all of you legislators, feel if someone wanted to make changes on the rules of your retirement plan without your input or without your knowledge. I don't understand how this bill even came to be. In 2007 and 8, landowners also in Scott County watched a privately owned crude oil pipeline come through Scott County and devalue all our properties.
Okay.
We were, they cut and burned trees that were in their way, and they did the same thing on my land. Gave us insultingly low offers, and finally did an eminent domain quick take on us. We had to hire an attorney to take this to court to try and get fair and just compensation from this privately owned company, as our Constitution states, for our properties. But now it's 2009, and we're not done with that yet. We still have not received compensation. At the present time, we also have what I call as an unnecessary high-voltage transmission line that is also coming through Scott County. If nobody here has ever had any of these things happen to you, you can thank the Lord that you have not ever had to do this. It's a mess. It's another public service corporation that will also have the right to use eminent domain on us if the certificate of need gets approved. We're being annihilated out here in Scott County. It's a mess. And Green Acres seems to be just one more of the things that are happening to us. And I don't know where it's going to end. My property, being next to a developing area, and I want to save my property, and now I can't belong to Green Acres anymore, I want to save my land. I don't want to be forced to sell to a developer at a much lower price given the economy. It's just unreal. I just don't understand this. It's for these reasons, and I'm not just one voice out here. There are a lot of us out there that strongly feel that now is the time for our elected government leaders to show a whole lot more fiscal and moral responsibility than what we've ever seen. A lot of plain, ordinary people out there are rapidly losing trust in our own government, and that's a shame. That should never have happened. It shouldn't be happening. It was and it should still be the obligation of elected government officials to work for all of its citizens in whatever way they can, not just special interests or big businesses. It is for these reasons that myself, along with a lot of other people, are respectfully asking you to repeal the 08 changes to the Green Acres program and return it to what it was. Leave it alone, make some changes if they're necessary, but do it only after everybody has had some input. You know, you can't just dump all this on us and expect us to be satisfied with it. It's just not nice. And last but not least, the state of Minnesota needs more money than they should do what the rest of us do, and that's quite simple. Quit spending what you don't have. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Questions for the witness? Senator Skoy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just briefly, for the committee's knowledge, everybody who is currently enrolled in Green Acres prior to the changes, eligibility continues. Everybody was grandfathered in. With regard to the seven-year, three-year clawback, that never was a Senate initiative, and I've committed to returning to 3 years from 7 years. And there is no state impact to this. This is totally a local financial issue with these property taxes, how they shift around within the local jurisdiction, as Senator Dibble had pointed out. But if you were in the program before, you're in. You're grandfathered in. And we are going to fix this transfer to a child language so that everything would remain the same as the contract that these people signed when they originally signed. And that is that marriage, death, divorce, or transfer to a child doesn't initiate a reevaluation. And the contract that everybody signed when they originally signed up did include a three-year clawback. So we would, if the fix, as I originally introduced, was that's where we were headed. But this current law is a repeal of the changes.
So how do we account for Ms. Osborne's situation? Was that an assessor interpretation problem that they said she couldn't be in there in the Green Acres anymore?
No, that's what we were told by the county tax department.
Right, that's my question. Was the county tax department not interpreting the OA changes correctly?
I have no idea.
I mean, we've heard of that situation in other instances as well. But that doesn't take away the problem.
Well, we were never told that.
Okay. Senator Scoy, was there a three-year clawback prior to 2008?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. That's the question, Senator Scoy. Those people that would have changed under the old or the new law, the 2008 law, by January 2, were there a lot of those people that actually did make that change, that got out of the program? Are they going to be allowed to go back into the program? Am I missing that? Or?
Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, nobody has been required to go in or out of the program. There was a date, January 2nd, I believe it was. There was some confusion about it, but it was an intent to what was the intent is to stay in or not stay in, with the final determination to be made probably late summer or this fall. But I don't think anybody has been required to go in or out of the program.
It says the Section 9, Senator Ingebrigtsen, says that anyone who is in it must, and that was removed since May of 2008, has to be reinstated at the request of the owner. Senator.
Well, Mr. Scoy? Chair, just to piggyback on what Senator Scoy was saying, that was another level of confusion, the January 2nd intent. And I got hundreds of those calls, and they were just asked to issue their intent on what they plan to do. And then this summer or early this fall, we were going to ask them to confirm what they wanted to do. But the January 2nd date was a date of intent and certainly was not binding.
Thank you,
Ms.
Mr.
Auburn,
Chairman.
Thank you.
I have to leave.
Thank you
I've
very
got
much
another
for, your,
appointment.
For your testimony. Deb and Neil Kruger.
I won't hold my breath.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you. I am Debbie Krieger, and I am a Christmas tree farmer in Lake Elmo, Minnesota. Our family has been growing and raising and harvesting Christmas trees in the St. Croix Valley for over 50 years. We plan to continue raising Christmas trees on our farm, and we are in the process of putting our farm into a conservation easement, and as well as we've just finished a quarter at St. Thomas learning how to transfer our farm on to our son and his wife so that they can continue tree farming in the future. Thoreau has said, "What a gift we have been given to have had the opportunity to live and work and grow the earth." We are concerned about this Green Acre Bill in many different ways. I would say that no farmer in the state of Minnesota has been notified more than once about the changes. We all have to sign up each year to put ourselves back into the Green Acres program, and we all do that. But this new law was a complete surprise to all of us. There are many different kinds and types of farmers in this state. And 40 years ago, we all signed on to the Green Acres because its intention was to keep farmers on their land, to preserve farmlands across the state, and to also protect our wetlands, marshes, and woods. But last summer, this new bill was introduced that we did not know about, and it would change the shape of farming in our state as well as the future of farming and open spaces. We, too, add to the economy of our state through the production of corn, wheat, hazelnuts, honeybees, maple syrup, wild rice, Christmas trees, fruits and vegetables, and so much more in big and little ways. I am representing the Minnesota Christmas Tree Growers Association. There seems to be a problem in the tax committee and the assessors in determining what is productive and non-productive land. And as I have been in the House committee and the Senate committee and sitting here today, I'm beginning to understand a little bit more about what that problem is. I'm understanding the difference between hunting land and recreation land, which we also own, and productive farmland, such as Christmas trees or some sort of a crop. On our croplands, there is nothing that's non-productive. There is no piece of our farm, any of our farmlands in the state, that is not productive. That includes the wetlands, the marshes, the swales, the woods. No piece of a farmer's land is non-productive because it is part of the whole complete sustainable ecosystem of our farms. The wetlands and marshes serve to hold the rainfall and to keep our fields from flooding. And they also serve to hold the soil erosion, not to mention the providing critical habitat and food for Minnesota's birds, insects, frogs, fragile plants and flowers, and all the other living things. So whereas we see that as the difference between the hunting land and the rec land and the agricultural land. All of our pieces of our farms are beneficial. As I'm learning these last few weeks, the livestock and the horse farmers are saying, if you consider our pond non-productive, where will our horses and cows drink? Where will our horses pasture? If you are an assessor, like our assessor in Washington County explained to me, these are all wasteland, considered wasteland, and they will fly overhead every 3 years and try to determine what is and is not productive or non-productive land on our farms. But yesterday I heard a woman speak who's a hazelnut farmer. She farms in the woods. You won't see her when you fly overhead, but she has a quite productive hazelnut farm. The walnut farmers, the maple syrup producers. What about the wild rice people? What about the kinds of types of crops that maybe you can't see from the air or you don't understand from the land? These are all a part of our complete whole farm picture. When you have a crop, you also have fallow land. So possibly in that year, you're flying over and you will see farmland that's fallow, that's non-producing that year. But you have to stop to realize that land is still productive. Underneath the soil, underneath the ground, is still viable, growing, important land. In the Christmas tree business, we have a 10 to 15-year crop rotation. All of us farmers rotate our crops, but it's a far greater length of time. We put a different species into a particular place on our farm because we do not wish to have a monoculture, so we rotate, just like all the other crop farms do. If you change this, it will drive up the cost of corn and wheat and rye and barley and even Christmas trees all over the state. In House File number 117, and I believe it's 338, there is wording in there that talks about timber and wood products. I would like you to also include and insert the words Christmas trees in that. It seems that whenever you have a bill pertaining to farmers, you should ask a farmer. There's no one in this state, no farmer in this state that had any clue that you've been working on this for 3 years. We just found out about this bill a month ago when someone from the land stewardship knocked on our door. So it's really scary. I understand that there is, $35 million that can be recouped by flying over and deciding what's productive and non-productive land. But in a farmer's eyes, you can buy more books next year You can buy more tables. You can build more roads, more bridges. You can build another stadium. But once our land is gone, it's gone. You're not going to get it back. And someone made the statement about other people having to pick up the slack for the difference in our green acre tax in someone else's property tax. And yet, I contend that living next to a farm, any kind of farm, adds much more property value to the surrounding neighbors than living next to a strip mall or a mini mall or a liquor store or anything else that would take the place of our farmland. I would ask that in the future, any type of kind of bill that would impact us farmers and our way of life and our future, that you would ask the farmers to be a part of your decision. As I said earlier, the honeybee farmers, the maple syrup, the Christmas tree growers, all the different kinds, the honey, fruit and berry, the vegetable farmers, all the different kinds of farmers we have in the state, we'd all be more than happy to meet with you to form some sort of a citizen coalition that can help you come up with your ideas, possibly help you to differentiate between what is productive and non-productive farmland. We could help you understand the different kinds of land. And I would encourage you to, if you want to find out who we are, I would encourage you to look at your Minnesota Grown directory. It's quite thick, and we're all in there. We're all represented. And we'd all be more than happy to help you. Many farmers, as this new bill stands, around the state are going to be forced to sell their lands just to be able to pay the increased taxes. I know one Christmas tree farmer who has retired in his land. His taxes have gone up 600%. Farmers, by and large, a lot of them are afraid of government. A lot of them don't have computers, so we can't keep in touch with what's going on. But we're going to be forced to sell our land if there's a seven-year back payback. We're going to be forced to quit farming if taxes are equalized across the state. We're smart enough to understand if we sold our land to developers or to mini malls or to pave a parking lot, we could get a lot more money, and possibly it would make a lot more sense to you from an economic standpoint than it does to us, because we are the ones who are sitting on tractors in the rain, in the snow, in the mud, year-round, trying to produce our crops, because we believe that it's important to keep growing food and to keep growing crops and to protect these open and green spaces for our children's children's children. Surely they're going to challenge us if we don't do something to protect these lands, and if we give them away, and if we leave behind for them a legacy of paved parking lots, liquor stores, houses, and mini malls. In summary, on behalf of the Minnesota Christmas tree growers and on behalf of the fruit and berry and the vegetable growers and the crop growers and the horse farmers and the livestock and the people that have the bluffs, you know, down in Winona, all of us in the state, I would encourage you to ask us to be a part of finding some sort of resolution in this bill. And I would ask you to repeal the Green Acres bill that was passed in 2008 and start over. Because once our lands and our open spaces are gone, in the critical habitat and the birds and the frogs and the deer, once they're all gone, they're going to be gone forever, and you can't get them back next session. Thank you. I'll take some questions if you have them.
Thank you. Questions for the witness? Very well said, Ms. Krieger. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators. My name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and our members do support repealing the changes made to the Green Acres law last year and going back and starting over. Actually, in 2008, we did have as one of our legislative priorities that we actually wanted to form a task force to look at expanding green acres. As Senator Scoy said, there's 35 counties that don't have green acres in them, and we have heard from our members that wanted to get into green acres. And so that was the approach we took last year, was to look at it and also look at how it was working in the concerns with the legislative auditor and look at some of those approaches. Specifically, though, our members also knowing that if a repeal is not practicable, we would work on addressing some of the changes made last year. And since you're the Environment Committee, I just want to talk about two specific environmental issues and concerns that we have. The first one is that we would support allowing the conservation programs, the CRP, RIM programs, to be accounted as productive ag land and allowed in to ag land. That was one of the changes made last year. You've heard plenty about that today. The best story I had about that was one of the farmers in Senator Phoebe's district came up to me and he said, Tom, he said, I'm 72 years old. I got a box of trophies from the Soil and Water Conservation District for doing the right thing and taking my 60 acres that I farmed next to the river and putting it in CRP. He said, for 50 years, I farmed that land, and they kept telling me, take it out. So he said, I did. I took it out, and I put CRP in it. But he said, now with the changes, he said, I'm 72 years old. I'm still an active farmer. I was out combining corn on my other land, he said, but with the payback and the changes, and I need to transfer it to my son, I think I'm going to take it out. And so that was a concern, and looking at those changes. And I think you've heard about that today, and we want to go back and look at that. Incidentally, Mr. Chair, too, I have a letter, maybe the page can pass, that's addressed to you that was given today by the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. They couldn't be here today, but it also states that their membership is concerned about the changes made to Green Acres program and provides financial disincentives for landowners to enroll in the various USDA and state conservation programs. So maybe I could pass that out. Second issue on conservation specifically and the environment is the issue you've heard on the non-productive land issue. We did talk about this last year. We were in meetings last year. We talked about grandfather clause. You heard a lot about that. And Senator Scoy said if you're in the program, you're grandfathered, but not completely. You had to declare, as Senator Scoy said, by November or January 2nd of this year, what your intention was to do with this land. If you decided to take that land out, you would have a 3-year payback this year. You're kind of getting a deal this year on your non-productive acres. If you don't decide, at some point the payback then would go to 7 years on the non-productive acres. And so a lot of farmers are faced with that. What are they going to do with that property? And so that was kind of the issue, that the non-productive land is part of a farm, whether it's a slough or wetlands, oak grove of trees. Again, you know, our members are active farmers. So I've been out on many farms. I kind of went on a little tour of some of the green acre properties. And, you know, I'd see a 400-acre farm where they farm 320 acres of tillable land, but they have 80 acres of groves of trees and CRP land and different things. But they consider that their whole farm. Now that land is, that 80 acres is non-productive land and has to be, they have to make a decision on what they're going to do with that. And so I think that, the other thing is we did talk about this last year. We talked about, and Senator Scoy brought this up earlier, was impracticable the split. And this is, as we go forward into the tax committee, this is the real issue that we need to figure out how this is going to get dealt with. And I'm glad to hear Senator Scoy said that they want to have some uniformity across the state, because that 400-acre farm, I would say that 80 acres should be impracticable to split, especially if it's spread out throughout the farm. Or if you have a 100-acre farm and you farm 90 acres of it and 10 acres is woods and everything, that 10 acres should be impracticable to split. But from what we've heard from some counties, that may not be the case. And we want to be clear that going forward, that would be our intent, is to have those farms count their land that is non-productive, but to them it is a productive part of their farm. Finally, I just mentioned too is that as you heard, farmers had to declare by January 2nd. Those farmers will find a letter sometime this summer about what they owe, and then if we didn't make any changes, those farmers that made a change or choose to make a change this year, they're going to owe money in November. And that could be $1,000, that could be $100,000, somewhere in that ballpark. That's a lot of money. $1,000 to some of the people I know is a lot of money, and they're losing sleep about that now. And so this comes as part of, we're also urging that you consider this bill moves ahead of the tax bill, because with a $7 billion deficit and tax implications may be part of that, that this bill, it would be helpful to move it earlier, because by May 19th, the last day of the session, you don't have to pass the tax bill by that day. But farmers can be planting by that day. Their CRP contracts are up. They're making decisions on how they're going to come up with $20,000 in November. So thank you, and I do appreciate working with Senator Skoy. We've talked about it a lot. We're working on it. I continue to work with him as this goes to the Tax Committee, so thank you.
Did you have your hand up, Senator Kulak?
Yes, I did. Mr. Chair, Mr. Peterson, you've said you want the repeal. I'm just curious as to how much of Senator Skoy's bill actually corrects some of the problems that you're talking about. This is, it's kind of an all or nothing thing, and I think his efforts were to try to save the good parts of the Green Acres bill and some of the changes that were made. And so far, we're kind of getting testimony that it's all or nothing. So I'm just trying to figure out what part is fixed in your mind in the and the agriculture community's point of view, and which part still needs work.
Peterson.
Chairman, so Kulak, it's a hard question to answer, because as we support a repeal of the changes made last year, and as Senator Skoy mentioned, this bill, as we got to keep working on it, because it repeals more than some of the changes made, and that is something we don't want to see happen. So, you know, our members, wanted to see a repeal. But we also know, in talking with them, how the legislature can work, and talking to some legislators who told us that a repeal may not be likely, that we came with some of the changes. And Senator Skoy's bill, before it was amended with the repeal, did address the conservation land. It attempted to get at the non-productive land. And it also, as he said, did get at the transfer, what's called the trigger. So I hate to be, not totally clear. So we support repealing the changes made last year, but not the total bill as it is. But we're hoping to work on that as we go forward into the Tax Committee. So,
Senator Skoy.
Just so the committee members know kind of what my thoughts are with the Green Acres fix, I committed to the CRP and RIM inclusion, and I continue to do that if for some reason the repeal changes. But the other thing that is kind of a little change that nobody's talked about is with regard to the clawback. I actually think that if there are changes made to the Green Acres program this year or some coming year, that we ought to give the people that are affected by that a time period to get out of the non-conforming category, or and into conforming without any payback. So it'd be like a zero payback for a short period of time so that people don't have a financial disincentive for doing the right thing. And that's kind of been in the back of my head as this goes along. And so whenever we do finally figure out what's going to happen, that's kind of one of the things that I'd like to include.
Why don't we just do the task force and make sure everyone's at the table before we make any more changes. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Next I have Bobby King.
I told her I want to buy my Christmas tree from her.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Bobby King. I'm with the Land Stewardship Project. I'm going to try just to add to what Mr. Peterson said, rather than repeat some of it. But we also favor a full repeal and going forward with some type of task force or input process. And I think that's necessary for two reasons at this point. I think everybody is confused. the landowners are confused. If it'd be useful at some point to take a look at the paperwork some landowners have gotten from the county. They're thick and they're not clear. Not to point a finger at assessors. Many of them are doing a good job, but it is confusing and people are confused. The second is some people feel kind of faith has been broken. They entered into a contract and the state changed the rules. So I think you'll restore faith with a lot of landowners just to reset the clock, but reset it saying there's still some problems that need to be fixed, and we're going to go forward and fix them. And I just want to talk about the three issues that we get the most calls about from landowners. The biggest is the productive, non-productive acreage. And, I mean, if you ask a farmer how big is your farm, 240 tillable, 60 non-tillable. People think of their entire farm as an entire farm, and they don't say productive, unproductive land. And this newly created unproductive category has uses on the farm, whether it's a wetlands or a buffer strip or a corner woodlot. And it also produces, of course, value for society in terms of wildlife habitat, sequestering carbon, and those types of multiple benefits that a farm produces. And I think it's important as we move forward in shaping any type of policy that affects farms that we understand farms produce more than a commodity, more than food. They also produce these environmental benefits. And we are shaping state policy and federal policy around this, and tax policy should be consistent with that. The second issue is the CRP CREP RIM issue. This is farmland. It has to be farmland to get into the program. And these changes are already affecting decisions people are making. A fellow from Washington County testified in the, I think it was a Senate Ag Committee, that he was all ready to go into CRP with some land. He got a letter from the county saying it wouldn't be eligible for green acres. He couldn't afford it. It didn't make sense. Then the last change that we hear a lot about is there's a situation where when land is transferred, there's a payback on the non-productive acres. So I'm transferring my land to my son or my daughter, and all of a sudden there's a tax bill due, but there's no money coming in. That forces a sale of some land that otherwise wouldn't happen. So as we're thinking about this, one thing we're thinking about is, we make the rules and then the rules make us, and we're concerned that these current rules will result in less farmland, particularly in development areas, and less farmland that has good conservation practices on it.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Appreciate it.
Questions for Mr. King? Thank you. Mr. Botzek? Mr. Efforts, did you want to come back up as well? We'll take Mr. Botzek and then you can come. You can sit there. That's fine.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Gary Botzek, Minnesota Conservation Federation. I, too, have a handout if the page would like to help me. Nope, excuse me.
We'll pass it out.
Mr. Chairman, as a follow-up to what Bobby King just talked about, Land Stewardship Project put together a letter that you're getting a copy of here that was sent to the Majority Leader and the Speaker on the 17th, basically supporting the repeal. And it's signed by 22 of the over 80 members of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, which the Minnesota Conservation Federation is one, Minnesota Land Stewardship and Audubon, Minnesota. Three of those members are here yet today. I'm afraid if we talk any longer, we'll lose votes, so I'm going to be very, very brief. We support the repeal, and let me just say about Senator Scoy, one of my favorite senators, there's no better conservationist farmer than Senator Scoy, and we too appreciate the work that he's done on this, not just this year and last year, but in the previous years, 07, with the veto, as you mentioned. 1967 is a long time ago. I wasn't even here in 1967. So this is a good law. It's important because we're talking about private sector land, and we know conservation programs to be successful in Minnesota need to not just be public lands. We've learned that lesson. We can't afford to buy every acre, nor will the legislature or the counties let us buy every acre that we want or need. We need to work in partnership with private sector owners, landowners, particularly farmers, and there are no better conservationists than farmers. And being a farm guy, my dad's farm, which we still have in the family, 120 acres, 80 tillable, 40 pasture, Elk River runs through it. They, you know, they're gonna, I said this before, they might do a movie on it. But it, you know, we wasted 40 acres, but that was our most valuable land, and that's where our cows drank water and still do to this day. But and Senator Dibble, who's left the room, talked about the future. This is not just farmland protection, but conservation programs. And now there's a third element to Senator Anderson, energy production, biomass. Senator Dibble mentioned about the possibility of a third element that we may want to protect or reward will be the protection of biomass on some of these conservation and or ag lands. So you're gonna might even have a triangle here. I think we will, in fact, very soon. And we're going to need different programs, different tax rates to make that work, both economically and environmentally. So we look forward to working with a task force or legislative committees in the future to bring that element into play. Carbon sequestration is, we have, hasn't been mentioned here today, but that's very important when you're looking at ag, pasture, and wastelands. And it's more than that. It's more than the ducks. It's migratory birds. It's beekeepers. It's a lot of different elements. And I think if you put a task force together, it would be fairly large if you try to represent all the players that want to be at the table. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stop and take any questions if there are any.
What do you mean you weren't here in 1967? Are you balding prematurely?
Mr. Chairman, I was a junior in high school, and I was to me, Green Acres were the crops my dad just planted, hoping they would turn green, and then brown, and then be harvested so we could go to a state fair. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Some of us literally were not here on this earth in 1967. Senator Phoebe.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Mr. Botzek, for coming and speaking with us today. As many of you know or have heard, I'm in the Ag Committee also, and just have heard this is one, as a newer legislator, this is probably the biggest issue I've heard about in my district. Through email, phone, and letters, and it's been pretty overwhelming, and I still am learning policy and procedure and process and politics, but I really appreciate these last two testimonies and the thought of I do support a full repeal. I still do. I have another bill out that's a full repeal and that I've authored, and I also really like the idea of the task force. For me, what I've heard loud and clear from people in my district is it's about transparency in government. And people did not feel, and I don't want to take anything away from all the efforts that were put into this, because I know there were efforts, but it's a perception out there. And that's not good for us as lawmakers. It's not good for me as a new lawmaker for an issue that's really affecting people in my district. So I just want to reiterate, I've spoken with Mr. Peterson quite a bit about a task force gathering, doing a full repeal, knowing that this law needs changes, but to move, kind of start over with it and form a task force.
Okay. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry to do this, but I missed some of the hearing, and so I apologize. I had to present in a different committee, and so... I really wanted to be here for the whole hearing. I appreciate, Senator Phoebe, what you said, and I agree with you 100%. And so what I don't understand, the part that I'm missing, and this is the part I'm apologizing to sort of ask you, Senator Scoy, to go back, and maybe you've already said this, but how do you respond to that? I mean, if I agree that it makes sense to go back to the farmers and kind of start over, should I vote for this bill? That's what I don't understand. That's the only piece I'm having trouble with, because your bill isn't quite there, and it's going in a positive direction, but it's not doing what some of the farmers think needs to happen. And so can we get from point A to point B with your bill?
Senator Scoy?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Anderson, I'll be clear with what we have here is a repeal. Mm-hmm. I mean, that isn't what I started with.
Yeah.
The Ag Committee made pretty significant change to my bill. I personally don't think the repeal is the best direction to go, but that's what my bill is at this point. I think Mr. Peterson talked about that there are tax changes that were added in as the amendment in Ag that we're going to have to look at. We just can't, I mean, we couldn't pass this as it is because there's other ramifications to what occurred with the split classification, the 2A, 2B stuff, which is outside of the Green Acres program that also inadvertently got picked up in the amendment. So we're going to have to do some changes to this. How far it goes, I don't know. The Tax Committee has done a fair amount of work in the last 2 years on this issue, and the membership hasn't changed, so I don't know how they're going to view this bill. I can't, I know what my personal thoughts are, but I don't know what they're going to do for sure. But this bill is a total repeal that we're carrying today.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Skoy, I appreciate that and your frankness about this, and I do understand the repeal is in here. What about the idea of trying to get public involvement of the farmers and the landowners that might be in the stakeholders and trying to work out some solutions? Is that something you think would be valuable at this point, given that this is one of those kind of unfortunate things where a bill was passed and a lot of people didn't really understand the implications and got hit hard, and it's caused kind of a firestorm out in the bigger world outside the Capitol? And so it might be a good approach at this point to try to undo some of that damage and move forward positively and together.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Anderson, I don't know if you were here when I gave my opening comments, but I did talk about some of the concerns that Senator Sieben brought up. And to be honest, I think a lot of the problems that occurred are outside of the Green Acres bill, and they're going to get addressed irrespective of what we do with Green Acres itself. And so this unrest, well, it isn't going to go away with this. And so I don't know if there's need for that or not, and I don't know exactly where we go, but you know, a lot of what we do here, we bring the public into our committee rooms and have hearings and involve them in that manner. And so, you know, that's what we're doing. If we need to go broader than that, I guess I don't have an opinion on that at this point. I kind of feel like I have been involved in it for a long time, so you know, it's different for me to have. I have a different perspective on it than other people do, and I'll certainly listen to what people think.
Mr. Efforts, welcome back. Please introduce yourself again. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bill Efforts. I'm the Assistant Hennepin County Assessor, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers, and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to come before you again this afternoon. We fully recognize the need for assessors across the state to have a consistent application, certainly with this law. We also acknowledge that there are the inconsistent practices prior to the 2008 legislation have led to a lot of these problems that we're experiencing right now. In light of that, the association got together as a group of assessors, hearing back from our constituency, our customers, so to speak, to try to find out what recommendations we could put forth that would help to be a win-win situation for not only assessors, but certainly the taxpayers first and foremost. We got together on a position statement in result of the 2008 Green Acre changes. And some of the recommendations we have are something we wanted to be considered were the fact that we would support a full grandfather clause of all parcels enrolled in Green Acres prior to the May 1st, 2008. Any sale of the pre-2008 Green Acres parcel would have trained a 3-year payback versus going back to 7 years. Just some of the other quick highlights, and then we also support the fact that if a spouse dies or if there's a transfer within a qualifying relative and that nature, it would not qualify for a payback. And then also we would favor the inclusion of CRP or RIM acres into the Green Acres program. Based on some of the testimony today, we feel that some of these issues would be resolved if, and I think they are, as they were in Senate File 386 as proposed by Senator Skoy, and it would solve a lot of problems and certainly be a win-win situation for not only assessors but for the taxpayers as well. So in light of that, I think, you know, Senator Dibble talked about, you know, needing a prescription within this bill. I think it helps to highlight that what's impractical to separate. With the help of the Department of Revenue, they're helping giving us more definition of what is impractical to separate. I just thought that prior to the full repeal, we had tightened up a lot of those inconsistencies, and we felt that it would help us to be more consistent in our administration moving forward.
All right.
Mr. Chair and members, that's...
Oh. Questions for the witness? I don't think we have any more testimony, so we can discuss the bill. Someone would like to make a motion, they can do so.
I will.
Senator Vickerman will make the motion, and I do want to flag for the members a letter from one of, I believe, Senator Stump's constituents, Jalene Johnson. She's not here, but she did submit this record. Senator Stump?
Just have a question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is the issue that we wrestle with, is it the 2A definition of property? How we define that, which is the agricultural land?
Senator Skoy?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, that is one of the issues that we have tried to resolve with regard to the Green Acres program, is when you have a program that is equalizing taxes, you have to have a value to equalize it to, down to. And it has to be some kind of statewide uniform program that we put in place in order to arrive at that number. The department has worked quite hard for a couple of years to develop a mechanism for valuing the agriculture land, and they do it based on, I think it's four or six counties, I don't remember the number, down in the southwest corner of the state, where the assessors have determined that the sales are primarily all agriculture and don't have these outside influences. Then they've developed a factor or a relationship to other counties in the state over history, and they derive this average value in order to determine if there's outside pressures, in order to determine if there's parcels tomorrow that have ag land. I think we're kind of working through that, and everybody recognizes that we're going to kind of work on that formula. But I don't think that's the primary issue. The primary issue here is how to value the non-productive land. And whether we completely repeal Green Acres or fix Green Acres or pass Senator Metzen's bill, that issue is still going to be there. It's one of the prime issues that the legislative auditor report addresses, and it's still there. And as long as there's a grandfather provision in the Green Acres bill, which there is in the bill we passed in 2008, the issue is still there. But how to value this non-productive land when it's so varied? Down in Houston County, it's big ravines. Up in our neck of the wood, it's more swamps and timberland. You know, out west, it's prairie potholes. In close to Minneapolis-St. Paul, it's wooded parcels subject to development pressure. The range of valuations on those parcels is all over the place. And trying to develop a statewide mechanism for putting a value on them in order to equalize or reduce the taxes, it's still there, and we haven't solved it. Now, I did have a thought, and I talked about it on Senator Metzen's bill, and I'm going to kind of ponder through some of this and work with Senator Metzen. I was having a discussion and an idea about maybe we could use the highest and best use of this conservation land, but then put a percentage reduction on it, that we would apply this percentage statewide. And I don't know if that'll work. But at least then you would have a mechanism for local assessors to use to put a value on these non-productive parcels, and then you would have a way to reduce the value for taxation. But when you've got this ag value on one hand and the non-productive value on the other hand, and you're trying to balance all that stuff, it really is it's a very daunting challenge. And that's kind of why we took the non-productive stuff out of the Green Acres. And as I'd said to many senators who came to me about this, I said, if you really think that the state will be well served by having open space law and conservation law, draft the bill and let's have some hearings and see where we can go. And I'm glad Senator Metzen has done just that, and we're looking forward to the discussion in the tax committee. But the value of the non-productive land is the issue, and how we do that, it's very difficult.
Well, and then there's... I think that has prompted the discussion, Senator Skoy, that about why this is assumed to be non-productive.
Can I respond?
And I think it, especially when you get in this committee, it grates a lot of people. It's like rubbing your nails on the chalkboard.
particularly with some of the testimony that we heard today about just the sheer importance of grass to the commodity operation, let alone all the other benefits of productivity. That really, I think, rubs people the wrong way when it's called unproductive. And I understand. I mean, there's a system that has been in place for a long time, and that's the process that has been used, and so we're in that. But now we have the opportunity in revisiting this whole issue to broaden our perspective on how the total farm operates. And perhaps in the tax committee, you can also have just as big a discussion on what the value is of land that is not necessarily tilled, and that it is just as productive. I see lots of farms with rows of trees along the edge. I presume those are there for a reason, to prevent wind erosion, right? That's a productive part of the farm. So why, just because it's a tree and not a bean, is it considered unproductive? I encourage the broader discussion of these issues. And I would, you know, it would be wonderful. I think it is a wonderful opportunity for the conservation community to connect with the county assessor community and talk about all the discussions that have been had. And perhaps it is our fault just as much that we have not conveyed the information that we've learned in this committee as well as we could have, just as much as the information regarding what the tax committee was doing was not conveyed to others. So here's an opportunity for all of us to do much better. Senator Vickerman renews his motion that Senate File 386 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Skoy. Appreciate your hard work. Seeing no further business, the committee is adjourned.
Okay.
I think we should. He's got 15.
Was that
Tom? That's the one.